And we're live.
What?
We're live. This is live.
Like we're Murphy Brown? What?
This show is live.
Yeah, but for no one listening to it, it's not live. For anyone listening to it, it's not live.
Well, it's our 40th episode and we are live.
Oh, this reminds me. Somebody insulted me on Twitter and said I was, quote, a live action GIF. Aren't all GIFs live action? I keep thinking about it. So I'm just saying maybe this is live in some universe.
Anyway, A Star Is Born came out.
Oh, God. I saw it the millisecond it was available due to homosexuality, and it worked out for me.
It was pretty great. I think everyone should see this movie.
I got to tell you, I don't know now, purely based off of the reaction, if I'm going to see it.
Really?
Yeah, because what I think people are... I don't think it could possibly be as good as everyone is saying that it is. And I think everyone was very excited for the film to come out, and they're making it sound like the greatest film ever made and everyone's winning Oscars and things like that. And I feel like it's the overexcitement this early that's going to make me feel like it's not. I just don't think it's as good as everyone is saying it is.
No, I think I'm sympathetic to that, because the deal is it's a 3-star movie. It is
right,
not
okay.
Perfect.
And it's not A+. And it's not
also,
a perfect.
It starts amazing. And then like all the versions of this movie in the second act, it's like, you know, this ruddy guy's alcoholism just isn't that interesting.
It's like, why are we here?
Yeah, exactly.
We're here for Lady Gaga.
And that's the thing. I appreciate the excitement. And I like Lady Gaga fine. I'm not like a huge Lady Gaga fan. And I appreciate the excitement, but I feel that I'm like, I'm going to go in and be a little disappointed because everyone's making it sound like it's...
No, when people say best picture, like,
yeah.
That's a disease. Don't believe that. Those people are rotting.
Yeah. I mean, those are the people who always think that a movie like that is going to win Best Picture.
And then they don't see any of the other movies. You know what I mean? It's their movie for them, so it has to win Best Picture. Mad Max all over again. I'm sick of those people, too.
Yeah. What about Boy Erased?
Right.
They're erasing it.
Sure.
Boy Erasure.
Too much Boy Erasure going on here. I actually think the movie was very fun. I love the soundtrack more than the movie.
Mm-hmm, I think so. And also, by the way, Shangela, former Keep It Guest, Shangela kills it, and Willem kills it.
Yeah, they're great in it. The opening is like in this drag bar, and it's really fun. And that's also, I feel like, the only time I really enjoyed Bradley Cooper's directing.
Right, because it looked amazing, too.
It looked amazing.
Did he talk like this?
Oh, man. And then you have Sam Elliott in the movie, too, so they're just like doing this like growl back and forth thing.
Okay, don't spoil it, because this movie's been out for a second, and I'm sure no one's seen it, but what's Dave Chappelle doing up in there?
The answer is very little.
I figured. Okay.
You know what John Legend did in La La Land?
Yeah.
Even less.
A soup son of that.
Listen, they love a black person to come in and help these white people find romance.
But by the way, he must have had, what, 7 seconds or 7 minutes of screen time? He said the word bro about 150,000 times.
So many times.
To Bradley Cooper?
Yes.
Also, he's just wearing like this white tank top, showing off his new muscles, because Dave Chappelle's been in the gym.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, whatever.
Okay.
He got a check.
We'll see. We'll see.
Do you remember when he like tweeted or something that like A Star Is like,
oh, it's the only project. He said it's like the only movie he's ever been in that he's proud of. And I said, excuse me, sir, have you heard of a little ditty called You've Got Mail?
That is disturbing.
That's baked.
I mean, please.
Bookstore chic.
The slander.
Right.
Jumped out. But I think people should see this movie. It's fun. I enjoyed it.
By the way, a more concise version of the movie, like, than the other 3 versions that exist.
I mean, the Barbara Streisand version is abysmal.
Oh my God.
It is.
She is a fabulous actress, but it is so long and so ridiculous. And Kris Kristofferson is among the worst singer actors ever.
Is this movie, like every movie I think made in the last 20 years, I think every movie made in the last 20 years is 10 to 20 minutes too long.
Oh, it's definitely 20 minutes too long.
Every movie. Frankly, I could have shaved some time off of Black Panther even.
Sure.
I think every movie these days is too damn long.
Everyone who's seen it has been like, I would cut 20 minutes from like the middle.
Not that this is my favorite movie, but after the movie Gravity, I'm just like, everything can be 90 minutes long. Sorry.
Every movie. You can tell almost every story in an hour and a half.
I saw First Man.
Oh.
And that movie is like almost 3 fucking hours long, and it is just about going to space.
And about, is Clara Foy like, don't go to space. No, wait, do. You're my hero.
Yes.
Wait, that John Glenn movie is 3 hours long? We know what happens.
Yeah.
He gets there.
Well,
what's the tension in the plot?
I don't know.
Okay.
Ryan Gosling got a big, nice face. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it.
And Claire Foy is the wife, and she's just walking around the house with the kids, listening.
Who do you like better, Claire Foy in this movie or Kathleen Quinlan in Apollo 13?
I mean, Claire Foy has like a really cute haircut.
Guys, this is the beginning. This is the beginning of this podcast.
It is
Let's
the 40th episode. We're live. We're doing it. I don't know. Coming up later, we have the Queen of Bounce herself.
We do.
Big Frida.
From my ancestral homeland. My mother and all her people are from Louisiana.
Mama Louisiana.
Mama Louisiana, literally.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The state that's my name plus a few letters, I've never been. If you add Lewis and then like a couple of vowels and an N.
I'm not adding you to anything. Anyway, we're also going to be talking to Big Frida about America's favorite political canvasser.
Our favorite Democrat.
Yes.
Fringe leftist.
Taylor Swift. It has been a minute since we have talked about Taylor Swift on this podcast. I thought she vanished.
And yet, here we are.
Here she is. Coming up, Melania Trump releases her cover of Toto's Africa. Somebody's first lady was on a solo trip this past week.
Amelia Earhart style.
She went on her lonesome to Africa.
The whole continent.
The whole continent.
She's like, drop me off anywhere.
She was running around like she was in Carmen Sandiego, just dropping that thing on different countries.
Oh, yeah.
But no, she went to Egypt, Kenya, Ghana, and Malawi.
Okay.
Which, as you know, is a country Madonna invented and then saved.
She was just basically like on safari. I have no idea why
She looks like Mrs. Colonel Sanders said,
yes.
I'm going to leave the big house and take me a vacation.
And truly looked like she learned about Africa from a computer game. Like, this is how you act here, right? Like, you have to wear this kind of tie and stand with your hands on your hips and look at the sun.
The tie. What the fuck was that outfit?
Yeah. Yes.
The, like, menswear, the suit and the tie. Like, where do you think you're going?
Yeah, so she looked insane in one particular outfit. A lot of people made references to Indiana Jones. I thought she looked like Brian Fellow from SNL.
Yes. Oh, I forgot all about Brian Fellows. This is her safari planet.
I don't know why she went on this, like, a Doll's House Part 2 trip. She fled the White House to get away from her awful husband.
And all her duties.
Yeah, but she was basically just out there.
Being best.
Right. Taking bestness to random countries.
She also, I didn't see her with a single African person wasn't like driving a car. Yes. I didn't see her talking to any citizens, meeting anyone.
It was like watching season 2 of The Crown.
I'm like, what are you there for if not to interact with the people? She was just like, she literally just went on like vacation.
It was allegedly for the United States Agency for International Development. Which is allegedly called USAID, but I'm going to call it USAID because I like that name better.
She's developing new ways to wear
khaki? It was founded by Kennedy in 1961.
Okay.
I guess because he wanted to travel to Africa too.
Do you think she sang the Wildest Dreams song by Taylor Swift to herself as she toured Africa?
Probably.
Like, was that in her head? I want to know.
It was like Taylor's video.
Yeah, right.
That video that she got dragged for only having white people in it and it looking very colonial
and
when she went
but
to
diverse
Africa.
Giraffes or whatever was going on in that video.
Oh, yeah, some LGBTQIA giraffes.
Yes.
You know what I did like? Did you see the video of that elephant?
That charged at her.
Charged at her because that elephant was like, bitch, get out of here. What are you doing here? Even the animals were like, what the hell is this I'm doing here?
Animals exchanging glances.
Yeah.
You said is supposed to be responsible for administering civilian foreign aid and development assistance.
She didn't. Who did she talk to? And that was, what was her statement? Because you remember after she was dressed like a literal colonizer in that stupid
yes.
helmet thing.
She said, you know what? We just completed an amazing trip. We went to Ghana.
That accent was like both Dublin and like Dracula? Like, I have no idea.
Read it normal, please.
One African country. she said, it's very important what we do, what I'm doing with USAID, and what I do with my initiatives. And I wish people would focus on what I do, not what I wear.
You didn't do anything. Here, we didn't see her do anything.
No.
I didn't see her do anything but get charged up by an elephant and look out with some binoculars onto the savannah. I didn't see her talking to anyone. I didn't see her administering shit to anyone. If you don't do anything, what else is there to talk about?
Nikki Haley did more walking down the hall turning in her pink slip.
Yeah, also, again, we've talked about this before. What does she do? She has the one thing where she's not into bullying. That happens to be her husband's only form of productivity. So actually, I consider that null and void. So I tried to pay attention to
what
you do.
Is the bullying thing different from Be Best?
They are interrelated.
Be Best is supposed to stop bullying.
So it's the same thing.
Because by Be Besting, you are not bullying.
Be Best arrow to not bullying. That's her whole thing.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's like a direct
I think we
line.
Probably went over that.
Yeah, we talked about Be Best. It's been 40 episodes. Kara remembers none of it.
I really don't.
It's like Memento. Roll up your sleeves, Kara. I put tattoos there.
I don't remember anything.
Do we think she like purposely wears this dumb shit, or does she just not know?
I think she and everyone around her, I think she in particular, is so deeply out of touch with the reality of the world. And I think for almost no second of her life in this country has she not been completely out of touch with the reality of this world. Like, as Mrs. Trump, like, she wasn't living like humans live. So I think even now, like, when you have to be especially cognizant of how things are being perceived, I think she just does not have that chip. I think she also doesn't give a shit. Like, there's no way that you're just rolling around in, like, $10,000 dresses to show up to just, like, random fucking summits and shit if you care at all about being seen as, like, relatable, if you care at all about people wanting to just, like, listen to what you have to say instead of what you have on.
I think even her most ambitious form of caring or doing something is still so out of touch that at her most effective, she would literally just be shaking hands with a zebra. I mean, I don't know what else she would be doing over there.
It's
what
like
she thought she was going to achieve.
She's a Care Bear that you squeeze and, like, says certain phrases.
Yeah, right.
That's as helpful as she is. She also weighed in on the Kavanaugh and
no,
Ford
business. Really?
Well, because people asked her about it, obviously. Because and she's always insisting that she's her own person. And they want to know, do you agree with Trump? She said, I would say if we're talking about the Supreme Court and Judge Kavanaugh, I think that he's highly qualified for the Supreme Court. I'm glad that Dr. Ford was heard. I'm glad that Judge Kavanaugh was heard. FBI investigation was done, is completed, and Senate voted. I will move on that, and I think that all the victims they need, we need to help all the victims no matter what kind of abuse they had, but I am against any kind of abuse or violence.
What?
That was the longest nothing of all time.
She's against any kind of abuse or violence. She's glad Dr. Ford and Kavanaugh were heard.
I think if she
and
had
now a, we should all move on.
I think if she had a gun to her head, she couldn't pick out Kavanaugh or Ford from a lineup. I don't think she has any cognizance of. I think she was fed that. She doesn't give a shit.
Dr. Ford focus over there. What's her car?
She also, it's been 2 years. She's still looking for a reason to be, like, living Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. No effing idea where she's supposed to go, how to get onto the stage.
And she doesn't give a shit. That's the other thing. She just
she really
like
doesn't.
She doesn't give a fuck. She is waiting this out so she can finally divorce her shitty husband. She did not think she was going to have to wait this long to divorce his dumbass. And now she's just biding her time and like saying whatever the fuck people tell her to say and wearing her clothes. And she does not. She knows none of this will touch her anyway. She doesn't care.
Right. She would rather be in Africa doing like a Vogue Nigeria spread. Not walking around
in blackface.
Not walking around pretending to care about.
Yeah, and it's her having to pretend to care about all this, and she's not good at it because she just is so deeply like she just. It's so clear she doesn't want to be here and doesn't want to do this. She can't even act like
she can't make the photo op look charitable.
Right, right.
Where
she's like, I'm petting the Sphinx now.
Where was Baron?
Oh, I don't know.
Was the Melania double with him?
That could be. I don't know.
Does he even know that she left?
I would actually love to know Baron's day-to-day, where he's probably just sitting there like, my stupid fucking parents.
I want his schedule.
Wait, yeah, I want to see his schedule. I just want to see, like, I don't even know how his days are spent. I can't imagine they're super pleasant.
By the way, looking at these pictures, are we even sure she went to Africa? It's looking very The Truman Show to me. Like, the sky is like a ceiling. And...
Are you a Melania Africa truther?
I think I am, yeah.
Okay.
She was on a set. She was on Paramount.
That's what I'm saying.
I have one. This week, guys, I have a book recommendation for everyone we're talking about because everyone is stupid and nobody knows anything. So my book recommendation, although I know she'll never read it, perhaps some of you will. There's an excellent book called King Leopold's Ghost, and it's about King Leopold.
Belgium?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he pillaged and raped and destroyed the Congo and terrorized the residents there and murdered thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And
he went on a murdering spree with his gay lover, Loeb.
Okay, that's a Leopold and Loeb joke. Okay. Moving the fuck on.
No, it was to, they found that there was rubber. There was like a substance where they make rubber in the trees in the Congo and just started like pillaging the entire country and like cutting off their hands. And it was so brutal and awful. And he was a fucking monster and made so much money off of it. And colonialism was terrible. And everyone should just remind themselves of that by reading that book.
Wow. I've been reading Wayside School is Falling Down by Louis Achar.
good.
Still a good book. But that too. Everyone read that book.
Starring Louis the Yard Teacher. Oh, I read them too, sweetie.
Anyway, coming up, Aziz Ansari is back. No, really. He's right behind you.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolet Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life, and it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
Master of Nuns Aziz Ansari joins a long, long, long list of men who have returned to their careers and platforms after allegations of sexual assault and harassment. If you recall, earlier this year, Babe.net published that really weird,
dubious,
horribly reported account of a 23-year-old woman's date with the comedian, where she claimed that he repeatedly pressured her into having sex despite her persistent refusals. We already discussed on the show how that underreporting really didn't do a lot for the Me Too movement. And there was probably a way for Aziz to appropriately address that and then continue on with his career. I do not think his comeback tour, where he is now criticizing extreme wokeness, was the thing for him to do.
Extreme wokeness has affected so many members of my family. And they're all ill with wokeness, and it's very sad. And this is some bullshit.
Extreme wokeness was what he built his fucking career
exactly,
on.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. It's such, I mean, and that is the thing, and we've talked about Aziz, but like, I think at the very least, this is a person who probably should have taken some time to reevaluate the way that he interacts with women. And no one is comparing him to Harvey Weinstein. No one is comparing him to all these monsters. But certainly, he probably has the Aziz situation is probably the most helpful, honestly, because there's probably a lot of men who behave like that,
right,
and who would do well to sort of take a minute and think, maybe I have made these women uncomfortable. Maybe this isn't helping things. And no, I haven't necessarily raped someone or assaulted someone, but I haven't contributed to making women feel more comfortable and safe. And so he actually had an opportunity to like have a really good conversation, I think, because I think we all knew he was gonna come back. I mean, if like goddamn Charlie Rose is out here and Matt Lauer plotting their returns, like Aziz was gonna be fine. So it is just sort of like lame that he didn't, you know, come with something a little bit more interesting and nuanced, and just like that actually I think would have helped him if we all could have had the conversation with him about everything that went down.
And also specifically, he's not having a conversation, at least according to this report, about anything in the babe.net situation. He's sort of trying to start this other conversation, and inevitably it just sounds pressed, right? It sounds like, you know, he feels like he got the wrong end of the stick in this online discourse, and now he has to react to it. Here's the thing. I mean, I obviously haven't seen the tour yet. Talking about, problems on people on Twitter being wrong, or, you know, people performing wokeness, whatever, this is not an effective conversation to me unless you bring up specific examples. You cannot just, like, shout out and say, like, everybody who's, like, being, I don't know, performatively liberal on Twitter is in some way wrong or in some way harming people. It's just like, that is just a conservative talking point. Sorry. Like you are not helping things by, you know, framing a conversation this way.
Right. The dumbest thing he says in his set, which is his new show is called Working Out New Material. And I don't think it's working out because he says that at least with the Trump people, I kind of know where they stand. But he said on the other side are zealous performative leftists who are competing with one another in progressive Candy Crush.
By the way, if you think the left is performing, you should meet the right. They are gaining followers and zealots. Zealots is what you're worried about?
They literally have a state television network.
Yes. That's so bizarre.
It's just...
Timothy Cricket. Laren is, you know, out here performing every day.
But I think the way that he's talking about these things, what you're really seeing is that he doesn't care about wokeness or how the performative nature of Twitter or any of that is actually making us worse. He cares about how it affected him.
Yes, he cares about woke people coming for him on Twitter.
That is sort of what happened to him. And I get that, and he can talk about things that are relating to him, but it rings really hollow as something that he like genuinely wants to have a conversation about and thinks is important and that we should change, because really you're just mad about what happened to you. And this is you getting it out on stage.
Right, because his entire... his show, his stand-up before, his book that he wrote about modern dating was all about understanding that women have to deal with creepy men. He has an episode where, you know, a woman...
On Master of None,
where a woman tells him about, you know, like, walking home at night and mm-hmm. feeling uncomfortable and, like, a man's behind her. You know, he was always positioning himself as a
hyper-woke.
Hyper-woke. And, you know, like, he was the VR trooper of woke.
Whoa. Caitlin Starr, J.B. Reese, J.D. Reese.
But now his position is, why is everyone weighing in on this shit? Everyone weighs in on everything. They don't know anything. People don't want to just say, I don't know.
And that's, again, please bring up specific examples. Don't just malign everybody who's on the left. Like, this is very bizarre.
Also, it's clear that you were weighing in when you didn't know, bitch.
Right, right, right.
So...
Also, again,
what's tea?
There's a world, like, if you look at a show like Portlandia, that is something that is lampooning liberalness and affect in a way that I think is like productive, because it's funny and it gives a face to it, and it's just, you can tell the place it's coming from is not pressed. Meanwhile, this entire thing just rings of, but what about me?
Yeah, and for me, like, I am not a stand-up comedy fan. And I think there's something about, and I think the fact that, like, you have Louis C.K. and you have Aziz and you have a bunch of these sort of comedy people for whom this has happened to, like, it's sort of, with stand-up comedy, like, they're kind of masquerading, like, they're trying to say something kind of grand. And it's like, no, you're trying to tell jokes. You're not an activist. You're not, you know, trying to have a conversation with the audience. You're just trying to make people laugh. And so, and it's not to say that they can't talk about things that are important, but I don't know that stand-up comedy is the most productive route to have conversations around Me Too and Time's Up and the myriad of ways that men have let women down. It just doesn't seem like, certainly at least these people are equipped to have that conversation.
Well, also, no, just sit down and let Nanette give another TED talk.
I was going to say, the problem with Nanette, though, is then people who care about comedy are like, well, then that's not stand-up.
It's so not funny. Yes, yeah, exactly.
You know, so.
You know what? I also just realized the other day that Nanette was in Please Like Me.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I knew her from. Yeah.
I was like, I knew
that's not her name.
I had seen her before.
Her name isn't
Hannah Gatsby.
I know it's Hannah Gatsby, but why'd you call your show Nanette? I'm going to call her Nanette.
Also, Nanette's a fun name and I miss it. Sorry.
Yes, Nanette.
Yes.
Speaking of how conducive comedy is, you know, for having this Me Too conversation, Jimmy Kimmel had a lot to say in The Hollywood Reporter when he was asked about Louis C.K. just showing up at comedy clubs like the man in the iron mask looking for revenge on the women in the audience. He said, if we get into the business of sanitizing every comedian and doing a thorough background check before they walk through the door, it's going to be a very empty stage.
Which is horrifying. But do you understand what you're saying?
Here's the thing. That is such a weird statement.
Hide your wife. They're raping everybody in here.
That kind of statement almost sounds like he thinks he's talking about, like, I can't justify it at all. It's so weird. What do you mean? Of course they should be vetted.
They're not going to do a credit check.
Yeah, right. I just don't know what he meant there. Okay, moving on.
He said, I think people tend to focus on the one or two people who walk out of a situation like that. And ultimately, the audience decides whether someone is welcomed back, which is untrue because the audience did not vote on the American Idol hotline for Louis C.K. to come back. He has been doing unannounced appearances.
Also, again, to me in that statement, it sounds like he's talking about people who say offensive things on stage as opposed to people affected by Me Too or something. I can't kind of make heads or tails of it.
Into succulents?
Yeah, right, right. So
he also,
it's strange.
He said comedy was democratic.
The people who are great rise to the top. The people who are good rise to the middle. And the people who aren't good don't make it.
But
who books people?
Right.
Usually straight white men, and they usually book straight white men that they find money.
I would say, by that logic, he thinks one black woman has ever been great, because Wanda Sykes is the only superstar black woman stand-up.
That's the thing. Like, also the suggestion, frankly, that any part of America is truly democratic, the entire fucking society isn't. The notion that the best people, fucking Donald Trump is president, and you're trying to say that the best people rise to the top, whether it's comedy or otherwise, it's just so tone-deaf and dumb. And because it's dumb, you know a way to be not dumb, Jimmy Kimmel, is to read books. And I got two suggestions for you.
Book queen.
We're going real elementary for you. And the first is Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. Just to, like, walk around in the shoes of someone who does not feel seen by this country. And the second is, this is also just a great book that everyone should read. It's called The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace by Jeff Hobbs. And it's about this kid. It's this black kid from Newark who was really, really smart and worked really hard and ended up going to Yale. And as you can tell by the title, ultimately he died very young. But it really is representative of the idea that just because you're good at what you do, just because you're really smart, the circumstances of your life have a huge impact on how far you go and what your life looks like. And just being good at something in America, in particular when you are not a straight white dude, really is not enough.
Also, I mean, the denial on Jimmy Kimmel's part that a huge part of comedy is white guys and their white friends banding together to pick somebody who would also be one of their friends, who feels like an exalted version of their friends.
Yeah.
And that, how rare is it going to be that it's going to be a woman, a black woman or whatever, a LGBT person? People want to like these other people because white guys feel represented by them, you know?
The lack of logic jumped out.
Yes.
And you know what? If you want to, you know, work on your logic and problem-solving abilities, you know, Sideways Arithmetic from Wayside School is a great book for you to read.
I forgot about that book. That was like not exactly canon, right? It came out alongside it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it just has arithmetic problems for people to solve. There's also more Sideways Arithmetic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is Louis Sikar still with us? He wrote Holes, right?
He did write Holes.
Yeah.
He is still alive.
Okay,
read Holes too, guys.
Yeah.
Really just up your literacy for the love of God.
Start with these Newbery winners and work your way up to Kara's recommendations.
Yep.
When we're back, Big Frida and Taylor Swift goes to Washington.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life, and it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a five-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
And we're back. Queen of Bounce herself.
Boy
Down is here.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
How you doing?
We are great.
I am as well.
Yeah. You look great. Thank you for coming to our studio.
Thanks for having me.
In the morning. I know it is early.
It's 4:30 a.m. basically.
It's 4:30 a.m. We're here to talk about some politics.
Let's do it.
You know Taylor Swift is a Democrat now.
Yeah.
Went to social media and announced that, you know, she supports the LGBTQ community and she wants people to vote out Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee. And she encouraged her fans to register to vote before the deadline.
She also said, what was her whole thing about? She said, like, I now understand people of color have been whatever, and I understand. Like, she listed...
Oh, she said racism is prevalent.
Systemic
and
racism we still see in this country towards people of color is terrifying, sickening, and prevalent. She believes for the fight in LGBTQ rights and that any form of discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender is wrong. For a lot of us, we may never find a candidate or party with whom we agree 100%, but she wants people to turn out and vote.
She does.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Taylor Swift, for stepping up.
I know, right?
I think there was a massive, you know, increase in voter registration, too, when she put out the statement.
There was.
It was like 60,000 people registered on, I think, like vote.com after.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. I mean, we got to get out there and vote. In order for our voices to be heard, you know, this is the way that you get out and you vote and make a difference. So it's very important that everybody do register to vote. Time is crucial.
How do you feel, you know, as a non-white person? I feel like you've had to be political your entire life.
Yeah,
you know?
Most definitely. I mean, I had to fight, you know, for different things that I believed in. And war for the best for me and my people. And yeah, so this is nothing new to me, fighting and, you know, against racism and poverty in my neighborhood and drugs and murders, like the whole nine yards. It, growing up in New Orleans was really rough. And now I'm being able to have a little platform to speak on and to kind of encourage people to do the right thing, which is get out and vote, because your voice make a difference.
I think the reaction to this, we like already could have predicted would have been if you had told us that this was going to happen, which is that you had a whole bunch of people, Taylor Swift fans, who were just like, she's always been a Democrat and she was trying to subliminally tell us that she was voting for Hillary Clinton. And the fact is, she wasn't. And she really has not been political, certainly not in a helpful way. And I think that it's this whole thing of like, you know, a white woman does something good and everyone's applauding her. And yes, she did do something good. It's great that she spoke up. It's great that she used her voice and that maybe she has influenced this election in a positive way. But it's also like, bitch, where were you 2 years ago? Because if you were there 2 years ago, no one, you wouldn't have to be fucking like last ditch efforting candidates, you know, and making sure that just like we don't go completely under. And
two days before the deadline.
2 days before the deadline, too. That's the other thing. It's like you could have.
She could have been stepped up.
She could have been stepping up.
Because if there was this much reaction.
Right.
How much reaction?
Imagine if it had been a month of her out campaigning to get young people registering to vote. Imagine how many more people, a lot more than 60,000, I bet you.
Also, again, like the delay, it took, Adele had no problem with it. And Adele's music is, I think you can only play it in minivans. I don't think you can buy a Kia Sedona without Adele's 25 in it. So I'm just saying, like, I'm still baffled by what took her so long.
Adele's career is fine.
Yes, I notice Adele is still a superstar. I notice.
And if we were back in the TRL era, I feel like every musician was always rocking the vote.
Totally.
You know? So it was just very weird for her to sort of take her time on this. And I'm very happy to applaud her, because I'm happy that people are registered to vote. But, you know, it's a little bit like the Pope says, I love gay people. You know, I'm not going to go watch Noah's Ark with you.
Thing of, I don't think that, and I think that's what you're seeing with a lot of mostly white people now, where they did not feel the urgency 2 years ago. They didn't feel like the world was about to fucking end, which is how I felt when Donald Trump was elected. And they weren't terrified and they weren't worried about what he was going to do. And now that they've seen what he's been doing, and now they're scared.
Yeah.
And now that's how they're, and now they're reacting. But it is this thing where you're like, oh, she wasn't necessarily, she certainly wasn't moved to say anything before. And it makes me feel like she didn't think it was going to be as serious as other people felt that it was going to be. She wasn't transgender and was realizing that like all of her fucking rights were going to be taken away. She wasn't an immigrant and realizing that, holy shit, this president hates me. She wasn't a black male who's like, wow, are they going to keep making it really easy to gun us down in the street? And it's just sort of, it's, you know, it for me, it's a little sad that you have to like see things get really bad for that like empathy chip kick in. You sort of hope that it's just functioning properly by living as a human in the world and interacting with others. But
especially
you know.
Since she is like one of what, like a small handful of people not to say anything at that level,
yes,
to be that famous. So it just, it continues to be baffling. So I guess in conclusion about her, it was incredibly late, but a strangely interesting time to be late, because it really did like galvanize a certain group of people who probably wouldn't have cared otherwise, frankly.
Yeah. Do you ever wrestle with speaking out about things like in your career? You know, you had such a great opportunity working with Drake on the song, you know, but you also mentioned, you know, that you were sort of the push behind, you know, getting yourself out there in the video and everything.
Well, I was, you know, I don't think I have a problem now being vocal, because I have a platform to speak on. And I mean, people want to know the story. So it's pretty easy for me to speak out on any and everything that I want to touch bases on now. When I was a little bit younger, I was a little bit more scared, because, you know, being black and gay in the industry is not easy per se, because back then when I was younger, it was just like, you know, I had to fight my way through to knock doors down and get shit done. And right now where I'm at in my life is just, it's still the same way. I'm still, you know, breaking barriers and knocking shit down and pushing through doors and letting them know I'm here and I'm a voice, and I'm going to make a difference, and that's what I do. So right now it's pretty cool to be able to have, you know, this platform to speak out on.
I would say you've worked with just an amazing roster of people, just period. Who's the most inspirational person you've ever worked with?
Being RuPaul number one.
Hell yes.
Ru is just unbelievable, amazing. And Beyonce, just her work.
Who?
At Beyonce.
Oh, yes.
She's
Beyonce.
No.
Oh, Beyonce. Yes, Beyonce.
Beyonce.
I've heard of her.
Well, her work ethic is just phenomenal. She's so sweet and so humble. And just to have that opportunity to work with her was just, you know, mind-blowing. Like, I died at home and came back to life.
Mm-hmm. Well, because, like, even Formation, you know, like, it's such a great song, but also the video, it says something politically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also really love, like, so my mom and all of her people are from Louisiana.
Okay.
And so it's, like, seeing that kind of, like, Southern culture that, like, I've known always, like, when I go to Louisiana and go visit my family and, like, the food and the music and all of that, like, it's really unique and specific.
It is.
And, like, seeing you and, like, seeing Beyonce, like, actually kind of letting the world see that culture a little bit more is really amazing. I assume that's something that's important for you.
It is. It helped open doors, you know, in every direction, and it hit on all of the stuff that happened, you know, during Katrina and after Katrina. And it just had a strong message, especially for New Orleans, because we were able to connect with it so strongly. Some of us went through it, you know, majority of us went through it. I was stuck at home for Katrina, and it was not a pretty sight, you know, sleeping on bridges and at convention centers and have to be rescued by boat and buses and planes. It was just something really life-changing for me.
I feel like I'm thinking about the rest of America still doesn't understand how specific and, like, its own amazing universe New Orleans is. Like, I still feel like that's not, they don't get that it's, like, its own, you know, like, musical rad place.
Yeah, there's no other place in the world like it. Every place has something special. And New Orleans, you know, being home for me, is just a very special place. Music, food, people, the culture.
I went for the first time this year.
Did you enjoy
it?
Right. It was great.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I want to go back.
You know what I remember growing up, like, if they would ever do, like, a soul food thing, like, in college or whatever, and they're making, like, fried chicken and greens and stuff like that. And I was like, my mother has never fried me chicken in her life. My mother was making me crawfish etouffee and gumbo, and, like, we were eating boudin. Like, it's just such a, like, sort of vision of blackness that we don't often, you know, get to, and, like, celebrate the diversity of people's black experiences, too. Oh,
most definitely.
You have your TV show, it's on Fuse.
It was.
Big Freedom Bounces Back. How was that, just having, like, a reality show introducing bounce music sort of to America? I mean, when the Drake and sort of, like, when Formation came out, people still were sort of, like, discovering the genre, I feel like, the rest of America.
Yeah, I mean, and people still discover it every day. You know, some people just don't be in that world. But having the TV show was another platform to be able to let the world into my world. And I was very happy to be able to have that show. It did something for me and for my career and for the culture of New Orleans and bounce music. It put bounce music on the map like no other. I already had been working 10 years prior to that, you know, traveling all over the world and shaking my ass and making people know about the culture. So the TV show was that platform for, you know, people of all different ages being able to see it. And the kids loved it. It connected with so many people, you know, on a day-to-day note, you know, because we, as artists, you know, some people look at us a certain way, but we go through everyday shit just like anybody else. We share the same blood. We eat, you know, the same food. We do the same things. You know, people be shocked when they see me, like, go to my corner store. They're like, I come to the store with somebody famous. I'm like, baby, I got to get things too. You know what I'm saying? Shit. So I was very grateful for to have 6 seasons of Big Freedia, Queen of Bounce, and it helped not only me, but it helped all the people around me, my team, my family, my whole staffing to be able to explore something new and experience different things. And, you know, we were able to travel, and it was just a great experience. And it helped prepare me also for just a bigger picture of looking at things and being able to handle things. Because when I would record, you know, for the TV show, it would get me prepped, you know. And every year I got better and better. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, becoming a producer and to want to tell my story the way that I want to tell my story and not the way that people want to tell my story. So I was able to see a lot. It really opened my mind up to be able to do something different and even like help me to create new ideas and new TV shows that I'm working on.
What's next for you?
New music always. I mean, that's number one. The music keeps, you know, the Frida shit going. And looking back into stepping back into the TV world and just continuing to grow and to continuing to knock down barriers and open doors for, you know, the LGBTQ artists who's out there and think that they're weird or different or, you know, they can be accepted. I'm a little black queen from New Orleans and Josephine, and if I can do it, anybody can.
Are there any other sort of LGBTQ artists who you know that, like, we should know?
I mean, you know most of them. Christopher Milan, mm-hmm. James Rice Chanel, all of the whole RuPaul entourage. There's many, many great artists on the roster. And like Ru say, we've let out 21 wildest of the drag queens yeah. into the world. So there's so many great artists out there. And, you know, it's time for us to really stop being in the background and be more into the limelight.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having
me. For joining us. When we're back, keep it. You know what it's time for.
I do.
It's time for Keep It.
Mm-hmm.
You look pressed, Kara.
Ugh.
What is your Keep It?
I'm not even that pressed about this. My Keep It is to Lady Gaga's way too early award season campaign.
It's like still summer.
It is barely fall. The Oscars aren't until
February.
Jesus Christ. And she is already everywhere. And I get it. The movie just came out. A Star is Born just came out. She's got to promote it. But she's already doing the like award season kind of thing. And she's told that damn anecdote or that I don't even know what to call it. But the thing about if 99 people are in a room and you just need one to believe in you. And Bradley Cooper was the one who believed in me. I have seen her say that. And I'm not even kidding. I'm going to say 12 times.
Well, you know, I used to be ugly in high school and people didn't believe in me. And I was just downtown singing my songs and, you know, Akon found me and Colby Adonis. And
I'm actually sad to say that's my favorite voice
that
you do.
Was good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
She also, that's the other thing. I'm like, you are an incredibly talented, beautiful woman. It wasn't like a fucking shocker that you did well in a movie and that someone gave you this role. Like, you're a beautiful, talented white lady.
Right.
Yeah, like that often works out for your kind.
Also, I just want to say that as a member of the gay community, I am already tired of being thanked by Lady Gaga. The amount of times it was all
I mean,
to,
get ready because it's October. We've got so much of this.
She still have all those edible arrangements she sent after Born This Way.
Yeah. We just have to yell "You're welcome" back at TVs 30,000 times.
I'm also worried because since she started so early, I'm worried how she's going to maintain this. I'm like, she'll probably end up here on Keep It. She's going to be everywhere.
I don't not see that, yeah. Honestly.
Well, surprise. Lady Gaga.
She descends with an umbrella.
I've been here the whole time, guys. Okay. I love Keep It.
Can you roll it back a little for me, please? Stephanie? Can you tone it down for the next 4 months? Stephanie?
By the way, I'm worried about her in this alleged Funny Girl revival on Broadway because now we're in the space where she's like she should take over all Barbra Streisand's old properties. But here's the thing. Funny Girl is about somebody who is funny in a hammy way, and she is this deadpan chick. I just don't think it's going to translate. I'm really worried about it.
Well, get ready for that award season campaign, which will start 2 weeks after this one ends.
That's right.
But also Rosie O'Donnell's the one who said it's happening.
Oh, yeah.
It was at some Randy Rainbow event. Kevin O'Keefe from Into tweeted, guys, she's not going to be in Funny Girl. And Rosie O'Donnell responded to him with, are you her agent?
Okay, that's kind of funny.
And then she tweeted, always said that rumor has it and more to come.
Oh, while throwing it out there?
Well, that like, she's literally teasing this so that Lady Gaga will agree to do it.
Also,
I feel like.
Randy Rainbow event, is he like our David Geffen now? I didn't realize he had progressed that much. He's a doll. Anyway.
I lost interest in my own Keep It about 2 minutes ago.
I don't think that she should be doing Funny Girl on Broadway. I think that, you know, she should lean into her Italianness and do like A View from the Bridge.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Wow, what a sophisticated choice, Ira. You may stay.
Thank you. What's your Keep It?
Okay, my Keep It is not to this song in general, which I do think is a bop. This is a song 1999 out by Charlie XCX and Troy Sivan, which is like a 3-minute pop song. You'll listen to it 50 times in the car, whatever. It's about nostalgia for 1999. I looked up the ages of these two people. Charlie XCX was born in 1992 and Troye Sivan is born in 1995. You do not remember 1999. You were not there with me fighting with stans saying that 702 is more important than Destiny's Child. That was the life I lived.
What a wrong life you were living there, man.
We all thought strange things.
Were you just sadly in your backyard calling for where your girls are at?
That's right, doing all the choreography that they say in the song. No, in 1999, here was the life I lived. You had that damn TRL war between Backstreet Boys and Limp Bizkit, and they were fighting for 1 and 2 all week, and then you were a little gay kid in the suburbs of Illinois being like, maybe if I text hard enough, Madonna's Beautiful Stranger will come in at number 10. That was the life I lived. I'm not nostalgic for that because it was a war I waged every single day.
Also, there's already a song called with 1999 in the title.
By whom?
And yeah, there's a young artist by the name of Prince. And maybe just stay away from anything that's even in that universe. We don't need another 1999 song.
Yeah,
we got one.
Charlie XCX in the song is also like, I just want to go back. Nike Airs, all that. Drive around listening to Shady. Like, first of all, do you even have your driver's license now?
Driving around in a car seat?
Also, listening to Shady. Eminem.
Did anyone call him
Eminem
shady?
On a Troye Sivan song?
And also, by the way, Eminem is still here.
Didn't Troye Sivan just release an album the same week Eminem beat him and got number one by saying faggot a bunch of times?
Right.
And now you're going to reference?
Who is Troye Sivan?
He's like this little Twinkie person who looks like Scarlett Johansson.
I don't know who that is.
Well, he hasn't charted, so most of America doesn't.
Okay.
So anyway.
The gays do.
Good for you.
If you're going to be nostalgic about 1999, do it in
a
qualitative way.
He has a song with Ariana Grande called Dance to This. It's very good.
Okay.
Best thing about 1999 being John Malkovich, and that's where my Keep It ends.
Mm. Okay, well, mine is The Faculty. Did that come out? No, 98.
It's around the same time.
Yeah.
Jon Stewart's in that.
I know. Everyone's in that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my Keep It this week is... it's about Hocus Pocus again. You know what?
It always finds a way.
Last week, Lewis and I said that we do not like Hocus Pocus, and it turns out we were correct.
I don't know about that.
Because Bette Midler is out here wilding on Twitter. She tweeted, women are the N-word of the world.
And wrote N-word.
Yeah, she wrote N-word.
Which is always really sophisticated looking, yes.
Raped, beaten, enslaved, married off, worked like dumb animals, denied education and inheritance, enduring the pain and danger of childbirth and life in silence. For thousands of years, they are the most disrespected creatures on Earth. This was, of course, a
Yoko Ono
reference
quote.
To a Yoko Ono and John Lennon song, Women Are the Nigger of the World. I cannot believe that. I always forget that they released that fucking song. And I'm like, the 70s were wild.
But then what was her, my favorite part was her apology.
Yes.
Whenever all of these black women tweeted, I'm like, well, then what the fuck am I?
Yes.
If that's what we're playing here.
Didn't she say something like, well, it still holds true.
Yeah, well, no. So her apology.
Said, I gather I have offended many by my last tweet. women are the ... etc. is a quote from Yoko Ono from 1972, which I never forgot. It rang true then, and it rings true today, whether you like it or not. This is not about race. This is about the status of women, their history.
And then when that wasn't good enough.
The two brief allegations against Kavanaugh infuriated me. Angrily, I tweeted without thinking my choice of words would be enraging to black women who doubly suffer, both by being women and by being black. I am an ally and stand with you. Always have. And I apologize.
Let me tell you something, Bet. I don't suffer because I'm a black woman. I suffer because of white people and men. That's why we're like, she made it sound like being black was a disease that you suffer from, as opposed to
it's
like
the grudge.
We suffer from white supremacy. That's the issue here.
Also, it just takes 2 seconds to think about what's something that was probably received a certain way in the 1970s, still bad, definitely unacceptable to repeat now. It's just, you could have said any other line in that thing that would have, in that Yoko Ono poem song, that would have been more relevant, or at least not as stupidly, ridiculously dated. Also, I've been dragged before for saying that Bette Midler is occasionally wrong. Like, one time she made a joke about, like, Trump, and it was, like, gay and Putin-y. Yeah. And it's just, like, that's also bad. And we're supposed to give her a pass because she has this amazing LGBT track record, actually.
She's trash on the internet. I'm just going to say that.
And she doesn't write all of her tweets a lot of the time, either. This one she definitely wrote.
Listen, I remember when she slut-shamed Kim Kardashian when she did her naked photo. It was like, Kim's going to shove a camera down her throat and finally show us what she hasn't showed us. She had an album, Live at Last, where like she was like butt naked on the cover.
Yep.
So you did the same thing that Kim was doing. Sex sells. I remember when she was talking, when she made transphobic jokes against Caitlyn Jenner, she said that Caitlyn Jenner's show was canceled. I am Kate. So is she going to go back to being Bruce now?
Oh, Lord.
That's the take I wanted.
And then you remember when, I'm not going to relitigate 2016, but you remember when Bernie Sanders made that gaffe and he was talking about the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
Bette hopped on Twitter and was like, well, Malcolm X and Busta Rhymes used to mention the ghetto.
Oh, no.
Why can't we?
Oh, no. I don't remember that.
I've been tired of this bitch online for a minute. And it's just like, certain people should not be on social media.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to know that sometimes Bette Midler, like Joyce Carol Oates, can be an asshole.
Bette, I have something for you because, again, nobody reads books, which is why I think everyone sounds so stupid these days. I have 2 book recommendations for you and anyone else who would like to not sound dumb all the time. One is Race, Women, Race, and Class by Angela Davis. A little history lesson for you there on how helpful white women have been to black women throughout this whole, you know, getting equality shit. Spoiler, not that helpful.
Now, what would Angela Davis know about any of
what
those three
topics?
What
would she know about any of that? And then also a newer book, and it's called Masters of Massive Resistance, White Women and the Politics of White Supremacy. It's a real dense read, but I would recommend it. And it really goes into the role that white women have played in propping up white supremacy, as we saw with fucking Brett Kavanaugh, because they still benefit from the patriarchy, or at least they believe that they do, because they are white women and probably protected by white men. So Bette, curl up, get next to a fire. It's fall. Yes, I mentioned it again. Get yourself some cider and please God, read a book.
And, you know, if those words are just too big for you, Wayside Story Gets a Little Stranger is the third book of the Wayside School series. And I enjoyed that book, too.
Mrs. Jules, you don't know what she's up to this time.
That's our 40th episode.
Ooh.
40 weeks of this, guys.
My God. I'm only about 50 years older than when we started.
I can't wait till our 50th episode spectacular. Who are we going to have on the show?
Oh, God.
Lady Gaga.
And we should have John and Tommy.
Ooh.
Oh, sure.
Both Johns.
The battle of the Johns.
Yeah. We can just, like, make the PSA boys fight against each other.
Like Night Death of a Thousand Stars, except it's just our own coworkers. Yeah.
Ooh, or we switch place with Pod Save America and they have to do Keep It and we have to do Pod Save America.
Oh my God.
And spoiler, we don't save America.
I'm going to say, and then America is canceled?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bonjour, Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed this week. I don't think Pod Save America listeners want to hear from Catherine Deneuve, but what they should do is go to votesaveamerica.com.
Yes. Crooked Media's Vote Save America website is now live. Vote Save America is a step-by-step guide to make sure everyone votes in the 2018 midterms. Everyone, you have to vote. Please, please. This is not a joke. Everyone, please God, please vote. It's not funny anymore.
And while it is not funny, if you prefer to think of things like this as a game, it's like a Final Jeopardy that everybody could do. You go into the booth, they give you the little pen thing, and then it's like the Final Jeopardy question is, please save us. And then you just have to punch in the buttons
yes,
that save
the
us.
The correct ones.
Yeah. And if you don't, we all die. I mean, we're all going to be dead from climate change, but we should prevent us, you know, from dying now. So
right.
That we can
save
see.
It till 2040, like the scientists said.
So, so we can see, you know, all that snow and the elephants and the whatever.
And as we get closer to the election, we'll be rolling out more tools to let you know what the big issues are in your state, who's on your ballot, where to vote, and how to make sure everyone else you know, and I mean everyone you know, everyone votes also.
Yeah. Otherwise, Thanksgiving's going to be really awful this year.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the dumbest people in your life that you can manipulate into doing whatever you want. This is your chance.
Yeah.
They are malleable. Know that.
Ladies,
get them to vote.
Ladies, gay Instagram thoughts, manipulate a man in your life into voting.
Right. Is this what Cookie does in Empire? I feel like be her or whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to use the verbiage that would get people to go and be manipulative.
You can also join Vote Save America's Facebook group and follow the Vote Save America hashtag to see all of the great work people are already doing. They're canvassing. They are campaigning. They are having uncomfortable conversations with people in their lives to tell them, we cannot do this shit again. We cannot do two more years of this bullshit, and getting them to vote.
V-O-T-E.
Go to Vote Save America right now. You can pledge to vote and get involved with the campaign going on in your community, and then go vote.
Yeah. Vote! That's our show.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community, is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.